see it white or black or gray or green to say we love one another? Do we love all the others too? Maybe you know it all. Maybe you know I'll fall and get it wrong a lot. To love as Jesus taught. I know I am insecure. I know I am selfish and I'm scared to lose you.
Good afternoon. This is KDVS 90.3 FM. This is a public affairs show called Books and Ideas. I am DJ Safikar. We're broadcasting not far from where the village of Putatoy once stood, inhabited by Patwin Native Americans. Today we're looking at psychopolitics, neoliberalism, and new technologies of power by Byung-Chul Han, published in 2017. Chapter 1 is called Exploitation of Freedom. Psychopolitics is written as a follow-up to The Burnout Society. Excuse me. So it expands on the ideas that were presented there. The Burnout Society claims that life in the contemporary achievement society is categorized by self-exploitation, hyper-attention, and exhaustion. In this work, Han argues that today we think that we're free, but this is in fact not the case. The present work, Psychopolitics, begins with the discussion of freedom. Han claims that we feel freedom when we're passing from one way of living to another, until this too turns out to be a form of coercion. Then liberation gives way to renewed subjugation. Such is the destiny of subject, literally the one who has been cast down. Han maintains that today we do not deem ourselves subjugated subjects, but rather projects, always refashioning and reinventing ourselves. But this projection really amounts to a form of compulsion and constraint, indeed to a more efficient kind of subjugation and subjectivization. As a project deeming itself free of external and alien limitation, the I is now free. The I is now subjugating itself to internal limitations and self-constraint, which are taking the form of compulsive achievement and optimization. According to Hahn, we're now living in a particular phase of history. Freedom itself is bringing forth compulsion and constraint. The freedom of can generates even more coercion than the disciplinarian should, which issues commands and prohibitions. Should has a limit. In contrast, can has none. And so we find ourselves in a paradoxical situation. Technically, freedom means the opposite of coercion and compulsion. Being free means being free from constraint. But now freedom itself is producing coercion. Psychic maladies such as depression and burnout express a profound crisis of freedom. Hahn maintains, they represent pathological signs that freedom is now switching over into manifold forms of compulsion. Hahn argues that although the achievement subjects deem itself free, in reality, it is a slave, insofar as it willingly exploits itself without a master. It is an absolute slave. There is no master forcing the achievement subject to work. Hahn maintains that as the entrepreneur of its own self, the neoliberal subject has no capacity for relationships with others that might be free of purpose. Nor do entrepreneurs know what purpose-free friendship would even look like. Hahn contends that fundamentally, freedom signifies a relationship. A real feeling of freedom occurs only in a fruitful relationship, when being with others brings happiness. But today's neoliberal regime leads to utter isolation. As such, it does not really free us at all. Neoliberalism represents...
Could you keep it down, please?
Neoliberalism represents a highly efficient, indeed, an intelligent system for exploiting freedom. It is inefficient to exploit people against their will. Exploitation by others yields scant returns. Only when freedom exploited are returns maximized. For Marx, free competition is a lie. It simply amounts to relations of capital to itself as another capital. Capital reproduces by entering into relationship with itself as another form of capital through free competition. It copulates with the other of itself by way of individual freedom. Capital grows in as much as people engage in free competition. Hereby, individual freedom amounts to servitude in as much as capital lays hold of it and uses it for its own propagation. That is, capital exploits individual freedom in order to breed. Just for fun, here's a couple of sentences which are poetic and interesting, but are difficult to make out and understand. Hahn, of course, belongs to the postmodern tradition. Hahn writes, "The freedom of capital achieves self-realization by way of individual freedom. In the process, individuals degrade into the genital organs of capital so that capital continuously brings forth living offspring." What is this imagery Hahn is producing for us? I don't think it's very enlightening, but it's rather confusing. What is the freedom of capital? And what does it mean for the freedom to achieve self-realization? We know what individual freedom is with reference to compulsion, but Hahn is not using freedom in the same way when he's talking about capital. Is he saying that capital is copulating with capital to produce more capital? What does that mean? Isn't there a more clear way of expressing this idea, I wonder? Okay, the next section is called The Dictatorship of Capital. At a certain level of development, according to Marx, the forces of production, human labor, modes of work, and material means available come into conflict with the dominant relations of production, conditions of ownership and domination. This leads to social crisis and the struggle to change the relations of production, i.e. revolution. Hahn argues that, counter to what Marx assumes, a revolution cannot resolve contradiction between forces of production and relations of production. That contradiction admits no dialectical resolution. Capitalism will survive because it can change its appearance, Hahn argues. Accordingly, industrial capitalism has now muted into neoliberalism and financial capitalism, which are implementing a post-industrial immaterial mode of production instead of turning into communism. Note that by equating the Marxist revolution with communism, Hahn is also telling us something about himself and his political views and leanings. Marx mainly worked on a damning criticism of capitalism. He didn't speculate very much or wrote about how the state is to be run after the revolution. Hahn maintains that as a mutant form of capitalism, neoliberalism transforms workers into self-starting entrepreneurs. It is not communist revolution that is now abolishing the exploitation of working class. Indeed, neoliberalism is in the course of doing so. Today, everyone is a self-exploiting laborer in his or her own enterprise. People are now masters and slaves in one. Even class struggle has transformed into an inner struggle against oneself. Revolution is to be run by a collective and cooperating body of persons. But today, rather, conditions are defined by solitude of an entrepreneur who's isolated and self-combating and practices self-exploitation voluntarily. In other words, atomism. In fact, no proletariat exists under a neoliberal regime at all. There is no working class being exploited by those who own the means of production. The neoliberal system is no longer a class system in the proper sense, Hahn argues. It does not consist of classes that display mutual antagonism. Today, the distinction between proletariat and bourgeoisie no longer holds either. The neoliberal regime transformed exploitation by others into self-exploitation, which was something utterly unknown to Marx. And it renders impossible any social revolution based on difference between the exploiter on the one hand and the exploited on the other. Indeed, given the self-exploiting achievement subject's isolation, no political we is even possible that could rise up and take collective action. People who fail in the neoliberal achievement society see themselves as responsible for their lot and feel shame instead of questioning society or the system. Herein lies the particular intelligent defining neoliberal regime. No resistance to the system can emerge in the first place. Now, under the neoliberal regime of auto-exploitation, people are turning their aggression against themselves. This self-aggression means that the exploited are now not inclined to revolution as much as depression. In our world, we no longer work in order to satisfy our own needs. Instead, we work for capital. Capital generates needs of its own. Mistakenly, we perceive these needs as if they belong to us. Capital, therefore, represents a new form of transcendence, which entails a new form of subjectification. According to Hahn, freedom vanishes just as soon as capital achieves the status of being a new transcendency, a new master. When this occurs, political lapses into servitude again. It becomes the handmaiden of capital. Excuse me. Next section is called The Dictatorship of Transparency. Initially, the internet was celebrated as a medium of boundless liberty. As it turned out, such euphoria was an illusion. Today, unbounded freedom and communication are switching over into total control and surveillance. More and more, social media resembles digital panoptic, keeping watch over the social realm and exploiting it mercilessly. We had just freed ourselves from the disciplinary panopticon. Then we throw ourselves into a new and even more efficient panopticon. Jeremy Bentham's panopticon isolated inmates from each other for disciplinary purposes and prevented them from interacting. In contrast, the occupants of today's digital panopticon actively communicate with each other and willingly expose themselves. That is, they collaborate in the digital panopticon's operations. Digital control society makes intensive use of freedom. This can only occur thanks to voluntary self-illumination and self-exposure. Digital Big Brother outsources operations to inmates, as it were. Accordingly, data is not surrendered under duress so much as offered out of inner need. That is why the digital panopticon proves so efficient. Transparency is also demanded in the name of freedom of information. In reality, however, this amounts to nothing other than a neoliberal dispositive. Dispositive means turning everything inside out by force and transforming it into information. Under the immaterial mode of production that now prevails, more information and more communication mean more productivity, acceleration, and growth. Information represents a positive value in as much as it lacks interiority. It can circulate independently, free from any and all context. Secrets, foreignness, and otherness represent impediments to unbounded communication. In the name of transparency, they are to be eliminated. Communication goes faster when it's smoothed out, that is, when thresholds, walls, and gaps are removed. This also means stripping people of interiority, which blocks and slows down communication. However, such emptying out of persons does not occur by violent means. Instead, it occurs as voluntary self-exposure. Neoliberalism makes citizens into consumers. The freedom of citizen yields to the passivity of the consumer. As consumers, today's voters have no real interest in politics, in actively shaping the community or the society. They possess neither the will nor the ability to participate in communal political action. They react only passively to politics, grumbling and complaining as consumers do about a commodity and a service they don't like. Politicians and parties follow this logic of consumption too. They have to deliver. In the process, they become nothing more than suppliers. Their task is to satisfy voters who are consumers and customers. The transparency demanded of politicians today is anything but a political demand. Transparency is not called for in political decision-making process. No consumer is interested in that. Instead, and above all, the imperative of transparency serves to expose and unmask politicians, to make them an item of scandal. The call for transparency presupposes occupying the position of a shocked spectator. It is not voiced by engaged citizens so much as by passive onlookers. Participation now amounts to grievance and complain. With that, the society of transparency, inhabited by onlookers and customers, has given rise to a spectator democracy. Once people commonly believed they were facing the state as an instance of domination, which wrested information from citizens against their will, such a time is long past. Today, we voluntarily expose ourselves without any external constraint at all, without an edict commanding us to do. Of our own free will, we put any and all conceivable information about ourselves on the internet without having the slightest idea who knows what, when, and what occasion. This lack of control represents a crisis of freedom to be taken seriously. Indeed, given the data that people make available willy-nilly, the very idea of protecting privacy is becoming obsolete. Today, we're entering the age of digital psychopolitics. It means passing from passive surveillance to active steering. As such, it is precipitating a further crisis of freedom. Now, free will itself is at stake. Big data is a highly efficient psychopolitical instrument that makes it possible to achieve comprehensive knowledge of the dynamics of social communication. This knowledge is knowledge for the sake of domination and control. It facilitates intervention in the psyche and enables influence to take place on a pre-reflexive level. For human beings to be able to act freely, the future must be open. However, big data is making it possible to predict human behavior. This means that the future is becoming calculatable and controllable. Every dispositive, every technology or technique of domination brings forth characteristics, devotional objects that are employed in order to subjugate. Such objects materialize and stabilize domination. Devotion and related words mean submission or obedience. Smartphones represent digital devotion. Indeed, they are the devotional objects of the digital, period. As a subjugating apparatus, the smartphone works like a rosary, Han argues, which because of its readily available, represents a handled device. Two, both the smartphone and the rosary serve the purpose of self-monitoring and control. Power operates more effectively when it delegates surveillance to discrete individuals. Like is the digital amen. When we click like, we're bowing down to the order of domination. The smartphone is not just an effective surveillance apparatus. It is also a mobile confessional. Facebook is the church, the global synagogue, literally assembly of the digital. Okay, in the second chapter, Han discusses smart power. Power maintains itself under highly different modes of appearance. Its most direct and immediate form finds expression as the negation of freedom. This form enables power holders to impose their will against the will of those subject to power by violence. But Han stresses that power is not limited to breaking down resistance and forcing obedience. It need not take the form of coercion. Power that relies on violence does not represent power of the highest order. The greater power is, the more quietly it works. It just happens. It has no need to draw attention to itself, Han maintains. Today, power is assuming increasing permissive form. In its permissivity, indeed, in its friendliness, power is shedding its negativity and presenting itself as freedom. The neopolitical regime's technology of power takes on subtle and supple and smartphones. Thereby, it escapes all visibility. Now the subjugated subject is not even aware of its own subjugation. The whole context of domination remains entirely hidden. Consequently, the subject thinks itself free. Disciplinary power is insufficient. A significantly more efficient technology of power makes sure that people subordinate themselves to power relations on their own. Such a dynamic seeks to activate, motivate, and optimize, not to inhibit or repress. It proves more so effective because it does not operate by means of forbidding and depriving, but by pleasing and fulfilling. Power that is smart and friendly does not operate frontally, i.e. against the will of those who are subject to it. Instead, it guides their will to its own benefit. Instead of standing opposed to the subject, smart and friendly power meets the subject halfway. Smart power cozies up to the psyche rather than disciplining it through coercion and prohibition. It does not impose silence. Rather, it's constantly calling on us to confide, share, and participate, to communicate our opinions, needs, wishes, and preferences, to tell all about our lives. Friendly power proves more powerful, as it were, than purely repressive power. It manages not to be seen at all. Today's crisis of freedom stems from the fact that the operative technology of power does not negate or repress freedom so much as exploits it. Free choice is eliminated to make way for free selection from among the items on offer. Smart power with a liberal, friendly appearance, power that stimulates and seduces, is more compelling than power that imposes, threatens, and decrees. Its signal and seal is the like button. Now people subjugate themselves to domination by consuming and communicating, and they click like all the while. Neoliberalism is the capitalism of like. The capitalism of like should come with a warning label: protect me from what I want. Chapter 3 is called The Mole and the Snake. In this chapter, Han introduces two animals that represent two different forms of society we've been talking about. Disciplinary society consists of setting and institutions of confinement. The disciplinary subject moves within a closed system. The animal of disciplinary society is the mole. The snake is the animal of neoliberal control society, to which disciplinary society has yielded. In contrast to the mole, the snake does not move in closed spaces. Rather, it makes space by means of its own movement. The mole is a laborer. In contrast, the snake is an entrepreneur. The snake is the animal of neoliberal regime. The mole moves through predetermined space. As such, it subordinates itself to spatial restrictions. The mole is subjugated subject. But the snake is a project in as much as it creates space through the course it steers. The passage from the mole to snake, from subject to project, does not amount to setting out for an entirely new way of life. Instead, it represents a mutation, indeed, an intensification of capitalism, which remains one and the same. Accordingly, the capitalist system is switching from the mole model to the snake model in order to generate more productivity. Motivation, projects, competition, optimization, and initiative represent features of psychopolitical technology of domination that constitutes the neoliberal regime. Above all, the snake embodies the guilt and the debts that the neoliberal regime employs as an instrument of domination. Okay. Those are the first three chapters, and we'll come back to this book next week. Here's Neuron Sisters.
Somebody let him.
Budget.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Quiet Threats here for KDVS Davis at 90.3 FM. This is listener-supported freeform radio from Northern California, run by community and student members. And coming up, now that it is 5 p.m., is going to be the Smiles Show from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Please enjoy.
Community, well-being, empowerment. Welcome to this week's edition of the Smiles Show and Podcast Smiles. Join our host, Jimmy Smiles, as we connect virtually. And now, here's Jimmy.
And here we are, connecting virtually yet again on another edition of the Smiles Show. Welcome aboard, and this is the special edition, gratitude edition of the Smiles Show as we celebrate the Thanksgiving holiday. So I look forward to sharing some of the benefits of gratitude as discovered by scientists and researchers. I'm also going to talk about some of the things that some of my listeners are thankful for, and I'm also going to talk about some of the things for which I'm thankful. So there's a lot of gratitude in the air coming up on this week's edition of The Smile Show. And of course, I'm always grateful for all of you out there who take time to listen to the show. So first of all, let's start with a big round of applause for everybody during this Thanksgiving season. I'm grateful for you not just during the Thanksgiving season, but throughout the year. Now, this particular show is a twofer. So you're going to hear this show twice on KDVS. You'll hear it on Friday, November 29th of the year 2024 at 5 p.m. And you'll hear an encore presentation on Friday, December 6th at 5 p.m. Pacific time. So I'm going to take a little time off to do a few other things during the holiday break, but then I'll be back with a new show the week after that. So as I always say, if you're hearing this show the first time, I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you enjoy it even more the second time. But if you're hearing it the second time, that means a new show is coming along next week. So there you go. All right. So that's all the standard disclaimer stuff regarding the show itself. And of course, the standard disclaimer, the views and opinions I share each week here on The Smile Show reflect those of myself and or of the guest of the articles and stories I share here on The Smile Show. Of course, this is a public affairs program, so it's not really so much opinion per se, but it's more about different perspectives. It's about exposure to different perspectives. It's about information, resource sharing, that sort of thing. So it's not really so much about what my opinion is on different things, because, you know, my opinion is that, just an opinion. I really try to share resources that will help you form your own best opinions based on the information that's out there. So that's what it's all about here each week on The Smile Show. And let's see, what else do I have to say up front here? Oh, besides hearing the show on KDVS, you can always catch the show on demand, thesmilesshow.com. Thesmilesshow.com is the website for everything related to the show, whether you are looking for an opportunity to listen to a past program, you want to check out the programming log, you want to learn more about my music interest, as varied and interesting or not interesting as they may be. In fact, speaking of music, I will be doing my year-end music blog, some of my favorite songs of the past year, of the year 2024, and that will be coming up in January of 2025. Hard to believe we're getting that close already to the end of calendar year 2024. But in any case, I'm looking forward to writing that music blog at the end of December, and that will be posted on thesmilesshow.com. You can also follow The Smile Show on Facebook. Just do a search for The Smiles Show. Instagram, at Jimmy Smiles Show. Again, that's at Jimmy Smiles Show. And then last but always certainly not least, you can reach out to me at any time.